WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 18th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Showers this morning, clouds this afternoon, high 50. Tonight and overnight, the clouds hang around, low 45, and then Friday, mostly cloudy, high 56. If you are walking out the door with us right now, it is 46 and cloudy out in Smithtown on Long Island. It's 45 and cloudy over in Bloomingdale in New Jersey. And we'll call it 47 and sort of misty here in Midtown as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning down in Washington yesterday, the president of Columbia University testifying in front of Congress regarding anti-Semitism on her campus. No doubt she had watched the tapes of the former professors, or rather I should say former presidents, who had appeared before Congress on the same topic last year. You remember the University of Pennsylvania president, Harvard University's president, did not do well in front of that committee and ended up losing their jobs. Columbia's president, Menashe Shafik, seemed to do better before Congress, seemed to be better prepared for their questions. She says that Columbia University was initially unprepared for what would take place on their campus, the swarm of protests in response to the October 7th Hamas massacre with inside Israel.
We held daily meetings of our campus security committee. We brought in extra security expertise and had regular contact with NYPD and the FBI.
Shafik says Columbia has changed its policies on how it handles demonstrations, saying more than a dozen students have been suspended for their conduct, which has, by the way, caused enormous amount of outrage on Columbia's campus, students saying their speech has been squelched. The hearing follows the Anti-Defamation League's report that gave Columbia University a D overall for how it's fighting anti-Semitism on its campus.
You see the concern here, though, with the lack of enforcement. You see the concern that speaking to these professors is not enough, and it's sending a message across the university that this is tolerated, these anti-Semitic statements.
Elise Stefanik there, some of the members of Congress questioning the president of Columbia yesterday.
Anti-Semitic incidents at U.S. college campuses have increased in both number and intensity since October 7th. And as a former professor myself of 40 years, I'll tell you, on a campus, that is unacceptable.
So there were no moments like there were last year when you had the University of Pennsylvania president there, Harvard University's president there, MIT, and they were not batting away these questions they should have easily batted away about the genocide, calling for the genocide of Jews. In this case yesterday, I would guess that she will not be hurt by this testimony, but I'm not always right. Joseph Massad is a professor of modern Arab politics and history at Columbia, and he faced widespread calls to be fired after he referred to the October 7th attack by Hamas as awesome. So that was one of the things they asked her about yesterday, the president of Columbia. Why is this professor still on campus?
Another instance when you changed your testimony is you stated that Professor Massad was no longer chair. Then you stated he's under investigation. He is still chair on the website. So has he been terminated as chair?
Congresswoman, I want to confirm the facts before getting back to you.
I know you confirmed that he was under investigation.
Yes, I can confirm that.
Did you confirm he was still the chair?
I need to confirm that with you.
Well, let me ask you this. Will you make the commitment to remove him as chair?
I think that would be, I would, yes. Let me come back with yes. But I think I just want to confirm his current status before I write.
We'll take that as a yes, that you will confirm that he will no longer be chair.
Well, she didn't say that. But Joseph Massad is still on the campus, and plenty of students there support him. Students were protesting at Columbia University yesterday, some of them Jewish students, saying they're not protected.
I think that the university could have done more to protect students.
We feel targeted as Jews and pro-Israel students on campus.
Yeah, the school south on yesterday filled up with tents and protest signs.
It's absolutely appalling that nothing's been done to address the systemic culture of Jew hatred that's just been manifesting at the school. It's traumatized Jewish students who fear to go to class, to walk outside. They fear for their own safety.
Yeah, now some of the people will push back, and I get these emails once in a while, that these are students who just are snowflakes and can't handle the counter demonstrations by pro-Palestinians. But one day, sometime soon, I'll tell you my own story of anti-Semitism on the college campus where I went, and it was pretty brutal, and that was a long time ago, and it's sad to think that it's still going on today. New Jersey, going to get a portion of the revenue from New York City's controversial congestion pricing plan. The MTA chair, CEO Jan Oliber, says the money will be split between affected areas to help them combat any possible pollution. So this was clearly in the MTA's back pocket, knowing that New Jersey would hit back hard against congestion pricing. Now they're going to give them some of the revenues. Now, it's not clear how much.
The way that all of this is determined is allocations by the number of people who are in areas that are impacted by additional truck traffic. And New Jersey will get its share exactly on the arithmetic.
Of course, the issue of no money for New Jersey, among many of the sticking points named in the state's federal lawsuit to block the plan. Now, it's not clear whether that lawsuit will go away. A judge isn't expected to make a decision on the lawsuit until May. The MTA wants to institute congestion pricing, which would charge drivers $15 to go below 60th Street near Manhattan as soon as June.
This, hey, we'll toss you a buck on the side to take care of New Jersey, is not acceptable to me.
Now, so here's the question. If they're going to give this money to New Jersey, and New Jersey has complained that they're hitting New Jersey drivers hard with this toll because they have to pay not only the toll to go across the river, but then another toll when they get into Midtown Manhattan, it would make sense to me that then they would take that money they get from the MTA and give it back to the drivers who are paying that congestion pricing toll. But that, of course, is not the way it's going to happen. Bergen County Executive Jim Tedesco, he's already, I guess, dreaming how he'll spend the money.
There's nothing to change the behaviors of the MTA. There's nothing to say that they're going to do a better job of spending $1 billion than they do with hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, so Tedesco says the money would go towards helping with environmental issues in New Jersey.
Certainly it would go towards helping with environmental issues and how do we look at doing improvements maybe to reduce the number of people that want to come here.
Yeah, so wouldn't it be easier, though? We could figure out exactly who's going through the tunnel, exactly who's getting into the congestion pricing zone, and give them back the money to the drivers. That was the original thought of this lawsuit, but that's not going to happen. WABC News Time 510. It was so distressing a number of decades ago and into recent years to see what happened in the town of Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. The DuPont chemical factory was there years ago. They pulled out. And then years later, some of the chemicals and barrels that were left behind seeped into the soil. And there were people in Pompton Lakes who got cancer. And so, of course, there are a number of stories in a number of towns across the country that are similar to this. And so sad to see this is happening on Long Island as well. More barrels filled with toxic chemical turning up in a Long Island park. When Northrop Grumman pulled out of Long Island, Virginia about 36 years ago, it left behind toxic chemicals buried in 55-gallon drums encased in concrete. And slowly they've been pulling these out.
Consists of solvents like TCE, petroleum fluids in it.
Oyster Bay Town Supervisor Joseph Saladino there says while excavating six of those barrels under a ball field at Bethpage Park on Tuesday, five more barrels were found. Now, he's demanding that the aerospace giant dig for toxic barrels across the entire 18-acre park, calling them the sins that have been left behind. And for sure, they should come in and continue this cleanup.
We want Grumman to find where all the drums are buried. These are the sins they left behind. We want them out, and we want all those soils carted off Long Island.
WABC News Time 511, the Justice Department going to pay over $100 million to the victims of Larry Nassar. The Wall Street Journal reports the department agreed to make the payment as compensation for the FBI's mishandling of the investigation into the former USA Gymnastics team doctor. NBC's Ann Thompson has more.
Nassar abused at least 70 more gymnasts after the FBI was first told. The Justice Department Inspector General, in a scathing report, found multiple failures and policy violations.
The report claimed FBI investigators failed to respond to the abuse allegations in a timely manner, which delayed Nassar's conviction by over a year. In 2018, you'll probably remember this, he was sentenced to what amounts to life in prison on sex assault, child pornography charges. Over 500 women were abused by Nassar during his time working for USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University. Actually, one of his victims worked right alongside with me here at WABC, and she really bravely came forward and told her story. And that was part of the reason that he was finally thrown behind bars for life. 512. Arizona's near total abortion ban still law today. State's House did not repeal the Civil War era law yesterday following Democratic lawmakers' attempt to do so.
We're talking about a bill that was passed before Arizona was even a state, before women had the right to vote, or many rights at that point.
Last week, the Arizona Supreme Court ruled that the 160-year-old law should be recognized. It bans all abortions unless the mother's life is at risk.
And I would ask everyone in this chamber to respect the fact that some of us believe that abortion is, in fact, the murder of children. It is not okay.
Now, you can imagine both the Trump and Biden campaigns are watching this story very closely, because Arizona is an important state come November. And if abortion's on the ballot, the sense is that is helpful to the Democrats.
To the people of the state of Arizona, your choice is clear. If you believe that a 12-year-old who has been raped by her stepfather should be forced to give birth, vote for the Republican Party. If you believe that families and medical providers should make their own decisions about their futures, vote for Democrats.
Yeah, so Donald Trump, no doubt wants that story to go away. Democrats, of course, this is good news for them in Arizona, a state that they barely won last time around. 514, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz says it's time for Congress to defund NPR, National Public Radio. He's responding to this bombshell report from a former senior editor at NPR who exposed alleged rampant liberal bias at the network.
Listen, I would eliminate the funding for NPR tomorrow. That's the right thing to do. We shouldn't be in the business of funding NPR.
Yeah, I think for a long time, even people who are longtime fans of NPR would be readily admit that the fact that the network has a liberal bias, always has. Ted Cruz says Democrats in the Senate will never let the funding go away because it's a liberal mouthpiece that's paid for by the taxpayers.
If you're a leftist, why wouldn't you be willing to use taxpayer dollars to fund a propaganda outlet for your view?
So Uri Berliner, this NPR correspondent, was the one who came out with this story. And, of course, it went viral. NPR none too happy with Berliner's essay, which was seen everywhere. They suspended him without pay for 5 days. But yesterday, Berliner quit the network. All right, 515. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Thursday. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy Thursday. Good morning. We should call it Friday Eve, don't you think, Noam Layden? Just to get up everything up in spirits here. We're getting ready for Friday already on this Friday Eve, Thursday morning, if you will. On the diamond up north in Toronto, Aaron Judge broke a four all-time, I should say, with a two-run single in the ninth inning. That was a big hit. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton hit solo home runs, and the New York Yankees rallied to beat the Toronto Blue Jays 6-4, avoiding their first sweep of the season. Judge was 0-for-12 against Toronto in the series with seven strikeouts before coming through on a full-count pitch from left-hander Tim Mizza with two outs and the bases loaded. Judge's hit meant New York finished 3-3 on a trip to Cleveland and Toronto. Soto had three hits. This guy's unbelievable. His third three-hit game of the season. He reached base every single time he was up, five times. The Yankees trailed 4-1 through seven innings, but Soto homered off Genesis Cabrera in the eighth, and Stanton connected off Eric Swanson to begin the ninth, a few batters before Judge's big hit. Yankee starter Stroman allowed two runs and six hits in 5 1/3 innings against his former team. He looked good. He walked two and struck out two. The Yanks will enjoy an off day today before opening up a weekend set at home tomorrow against the division rival Tampa Bay Rays. As for the Metropolitans, Starling Marte hit his 150th career homer, powering the Mets to a 9-1 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates in a sweep of a three-game set. Marte, who spent the first eight seasons of his career with the Pirates, hit the milestone two-run homer off the railing beyond the left center field fence to give the Mets a 2-1 lead in the third inning. The 35-year-old is the only active player with at least 150 homers and 300 stolen bases. His 341 steals does lead all current players. Tyrone Taylor hit a two-run single in the sixth, and Harrison Bader homered on the next pitch for the Mets, who went 5-1 on a homestand against the Pirates and Kansas City Royals to improve to 10-3 since an 0-5 start. Up next for the Orange and Blue, an off day today, is the start of a six-game West Coast trip tomorrow with the opener of a three-game set against the Los Angeles Dodgers. On the NBA hardwood, we had two play-in games in the East last night. The Bulls eliminated the Hawks with a final of 131-116, while the Sixers beat the Heat 105-104. Philly will now move on to the first round of the playoffs to face our two-seed Knicks, while Miami still lives to see another day. They'll hang back to face Chicago in an elimination game to see who draws one-seed Boston in round one. That decisive play-in game will take place tomorrow night, along with the final play-in game out west. That'll decide if the Kings or Pelicans will have the pleasure of facing one-seed OKC in the first round. Finally, on the ice in Elmont, Simon Holmstrom scored the go-ahead goal in the third period. Sorokin stopped Sidney Crosby on a late penalty shot, and the playoff-bound New York Islanders edged the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-4 in their final regular season game. Brock Nelson had a goal and an assist, I should say, and Kyle Palmieri also scored for the Islanders, who ended their regular season having won 8 of their last 9. After finishing third in the Metro Division, they'll open the playoffs Saturday at 5 p.m. in Carolina against the Hurricanes. A puck drop time has also been announced for Game 1 between our New York Rangers and their first-round opponent in the Washington Capitals. That's set for 3 p.m. start on Saturday afternoon. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 520. Let's go down to Washington. The Democratic-controlled Senate quickly dismissed the impeachment charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas yesterday. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says the dismissal, not a proud day in the Senate.
We've set a very unfortunate precedent here. This means that the Senate can ignore, in effect, the House's impeachment.
Senate voted to rule both impeachment articles unconstitutional because they did not rise, they said, to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
This is a day that's not a proud day in the history of the Senate.
She went. If you want to sign your proof, I'll do it.
This move by the upper chamber caps a month-long effort by Republicans to oust Mayorkas over his handling of the U.S.-Mexico border. Experts, meanwhile, warning Congress that a surge of Chinese illegal immigrants coming across the southern border pose a threat to national security. Former Trump administration advisor General Robert Spalding called it all pretty terrifying.
Every Chinese citizen that comes into the country is a Chinese agent of the Chinese Communist Party.
Newly released customs data show the first 6 months of the fiscal year, Border Patrol has caught over 24,000 illegal immigrants from China. That has already exceeded all of last year's total.
The Chinese Communist Party is opportunistic, and it is condition the Chinese to believe that they must do what the Chinese Communist Party asks.
The overwhelming majority of people crossing the border, those Chinese immigrants or migrants, whatever you want to call them, illegal immigrants, are single adults. The top Democrat Republican on the House Oversight Committee clashing over the possible impeachment now of President Biden. During a hearing focused on China yesterday, Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin and Kentucky Republican James Comer got into this heated argument.
If Joe Biden took a $9 million bribe from China, why aren't you impeaching him for that?
Well, who says we're not? This is a hearing on China, and you all have an obsession with Russia and Trump. It's disturbing.
We can talk
you
about China
therapy.
And Trump or Russia
you all
and
need,
Trump. He's got
need therapy, Mr. Raskin.
No. You need therapy.
Raskin pressing Comer to explain why House Republicans continue to push to impeach the president.
Well, we know that Donald Trump had a legitimate business that he talked about and he campaigned
the
on.
The legitimate business
what,
was
what
the
is,
White House.
What business,
he sold the White House.
Give me a break. What business were the Bidens in?
Yeah, it's good to see they're all getting along. Republicans have accused Biden of improperly benefiting from his family foreign business deals while in office. Meanwhile, the president campaigning through the key swing state of Pennsylvania this week. Yesterday, he visited the headquarters of the United Steelworkers Union. They've already endorsed him.
My U.S. trade representative is investigating trade practices by the Chinese government regarding steel and aluminum. If that investment confirms these anti-competitive trade practices, then I'm calling on her to consider tripling the tariff rates for both steel and aluminum imports from China.
The president was highlighting the tariffs he's proposing on import steel from China.
For all this tough talk on China, it never occurred to my predecessor to do any of that. The bottom line is I want fair competition with China, not conflict. To my colleagues when I meet other world leaders, I say, would you trade places with China? to trade places with their problems. They've got a population that is more people in retirement than working.
President calling on the office of the U.S. Trade Representative to triple the tariff rate on Chinese steel and aluminum imports. President Biden also weighing in on the Caitlin Clark salary controversy. You've been following this story. Of course, she was drafted in the NBA draft on earlier this week in Brooklyn, and her salary will be $330,000, something in that area, over $300,000, which of course pales in comparison to anybody who plays in the NBA, but of course not as many people watch the WNBA.
The Iowa superstar will earn just over $338,000 over the next 4 years after being selected first by the WNBA's Indiana Fever. By comparison, Spurs rookie star Victor Wembanyama, the number one pick in last year's NBA draft, signed a $55 million four-year contract. Biden posted that while women in sports are pushing boundaries, even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. The WNBA currently makes $60 million a season from their TV contracts, while the NBA makes $2.7 billion annually. I'm Lisa Taylor.
Right, that's sort of the economics of it all. When the NBA and the WNBA are making the same amount of money, taking in the same amount of money, then I think you have a fair argument that those players should make the same money that NBA players are making. Former President Trump meeting with the president of Poland yesterday.
Trump hosted the meeting on Wednesday, the latest he has held with foreign leaders. The two have shared differences in opinion regarding support for Ukraine during its war with Russia, with Trump skeptical of providing aid. Poland, a NATO member, shares a border with Ukraine. The U.S. and allies have warned if Russia overtakes Ukraine, it could potentially move into Poland. Trump has also met in recent weeks with the president of Hungary. I'm Mark Nayfield.
WABC News Time 525, the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. says Israel will respond to the recent Iranian air attacks.
Last week, Iran launched a retaliatory strike toward Israel in response to an Israeli attack that left multiple Iranian military leaders dead. Israeli Ambassador Michael Herzog spoke with Fox News on Wednesday, where he said the strike cannot go unanswered. He said Israel will respond, but wouldn't discuss any details. Israeli allies, including the Biden administration, have warned Israel against responding as tensions continue to rise in the Middle East. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Did you see this? The sons of John Lennon and Paul McCartney have teamed up for a new song. So it's like a reuniting of the McCartney-Lennon writing team. James McCartney, Sean Ono Lennon, releasing the single Primrose Hill. The two musicians co-wrote the acoustic ballad, get it right, Noam, together. It follows another single that they released in February. So kind of curious to hear what Primrose Hill sounds like. The kids of John Lennon, Paul McCartney.
Always remember Primrose Hill.
Doesn't sound half bad. I'd have to listen to the entire single. Anyway, kind of interesting to see the two of them teaming up. Wall Street closed lower yesterday. It marks the third session in a row that had stocks open higher, only to shift lower throughout the day. Pressure was put on the market after big tech companies like Netflix, Meta, and Apple all had down days yesterday. At the closing bell, the Dow lost 45 points, S&P 500 fell 29, the NASDAQ dropped 181 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 533. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 18th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Showers this morning. Some places you're already seeing that. Clouds this afternoon, high 50. Tonight and overnight, the clouds, they hang around, low 45. And then Friday, mostly cloudy, high 56. If you are walking out the door with us right now, and always happy that you are, it is 46 and cloudy out in Smithtown on Long Island, 45 and cloudy over in Bloomingdale in New Jersey, and just starting to be a little misty and rainy here in the city, 47. We'll start this half hour right here in this city with some good news. Operation Fair Play It was created to bring hundreds of officers into the city's subway system to bring the crime rate down. The NYPD says it's working. NYPD Transit Chief Michael Kemper says Operation Fair Play was focusing on making sure people pay their fair share at the turnstile. So many people jumping that turnstile.
Don't jump. Don't crawl. Don't come through the gate. Make the right decision.
That was the chief's warning when they instituted this new program. Riders say it's so unfair that they pay the fare and then they watch all these others who don't pay the fare.
A lot of people that beat the fares have warrants and other stuff. I mean, I see it all the time. A guy's jumping and a cop stops him, wanted for murder. How do you beat a fare when you're wanted for something?
Yeah, I'm always amazed about who jumps it to, because it's not always who you think's going to jump it, like teenagers or something. I see people, who look like they're going to work with a suit and tie on. They're stepping over the turnstile. Well, here we go. We're getting some of the stats in. The campaign was launched just a few weeks ago. 800 officers joining others in underground strategic locations that they were decided based on crime rates, community complaints, and MTA stats. And that's how they situated these officers. Police say there's been an almost 80% jump in fare evasion arrests. And that was between April 8th and April 12th. And there have been 175 fare arrests, 724 tickets handed out. Now, the question is, what crimes have these people committed? Are they being held if they've committed more serious crimes, or are they let out on bail? Those numbers we don't have just yet, but the NYPD says the crime numbers have gone down in the last couple weeks since they deployed these officers down below to catch people for crimes like not paying their fare. While we're talking about the subway system, the Manhattan borough president asking the question of the MTA, do they do a good job of publicizing the fact that they have bathrooms in the subway system? Now, let me ask you this question. Would you actually use a subway bathroom? Apparently, I should point out, they are cleaned a couple times a day. They're open from like 7 in the morning to 7 at night. There are 21 bathrooms in the subway system across Manhattan. So that's not a lot. But I'm trying to think if I would just... I don't think I would use it. I think I would hold it in.
Because there are so few relative to other cities. We've all been caught out there. We all know. When I talk to people, they say, wait, there's bathrooms in the stations? And that's a problem.
Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine concerned that customers don't know where or how to access the bathrooms. He says those bathrooms should be put on subway maps, on the subway app. I think that makes sense, so you at least know where they are. But I still question how many people are actually going to use them.
I saw it last week.
I knew about the one on the other side. I didn't know about this one until about a month ago.
This sign is new. These hours are new. The whole system's new since 2023. They shut everything down in COVID.
You know, there's already an anxiety about just going into the subway system for a lot of riders. So the thought that you'd be behind a closed door down in the subways may make you a little more anxiety ridden.
We want them to be on subway maps, in subway car announcements, and on the website, in the app. There should be all sorts of ways people know what stations have bathrooms and when they're open.
I still suggest people probably hold it in. WABC News Time 539. We told you how the NYPD is dealing with subway crime. Now they're talking about this latest accessory that is causing them problems. It's too many people who are committing crimes on mopeds and scooters and electric bikes and then racing away from the scene. We had that moment earlier yesterday, or rather, wait, today is Thursday. It was Tuesday night, where these two men rolled up on mopeds. They had two men on the back of their bikes with guns, and they shot into a crowd in the Bronx, leaving four people wounded, one person dead. And police talking about how so many of these criminals are using these scooters to get away from these crime scenes.
We're confident that this is a gang-related, gang-motivated incident with all gang members.
A very dangerous combination of scooters, illegal guns, and gang members. And that is a bad combination why four people get shot, one is dead.
Yes, so yesterday's or Tuesday night shooting was gang-related. Those people who came in on mopeds raced away from the scene. They have not found them. So patrols have been out. They've been seizing all these illegal scooters. They've taken about 10,000 off the street just this year. That's a lot of scooters.
We've taken a record number of scooters off the street, and we've taken a record number of gang members and taken them on the street. So this will be no different for our detective squad goes after these people who did this.
Yeah, but they're talking about how this is the latest tool to get away, because it's easy to weave through traffic if you're not in a car, on a scooter, easy to slide away. So they're going after these people, who, especially the ones who are driving around on scooters that are not registered with the city. Crazy scene in Midwood, Brooklyn yesterday. So the police are called to this home. Then the FDNY are called, and they think they have an incident of somebody making bombs in this apartment building on Avenue L. This was about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, so they evacuate the building. They tell everybody to get out. One of them is a mom with a six-week-old baby.
It's hardest because, you know, when you're a new mom and, you know, you have to take care of your child, that's the only thing that you think about. And you don't care if you ate or nothing else, you know, it's just about him.
Yeah, so at least it was a relatively nice day. So she walked out of the home. The FDNY, NYPD did their investigation. So it wasn't bomb-making material. Actually, it was a drug lab that they uncovered. So there was still illegal activity going on inside this apartment, in this nice building, and people were pretty shocked to hear it.
I would say I'm horrified.
Neighbors are angry. They're angry. Just crazy. So he was kind of off. I thought he was mentally ill, but he always came off as like passive aggressive.
So they didn't tell us what drugs he was manufacturing, or I should say allegedly show. One person was taken into custody. Out on Long Island, the man accused in the murder of four women in Gilgo Beach, he was back in court yesterday, his first appearance since February, as prosecutors turned over just a treasure trove of new evidence. The discoveries included evidence from Rex Uhrman's properties, and the judge wants the process completed as soon as possible so they can get this trial underway. Here's the DA.
Just today alone, we provided Barnes missing persons investigation from the NYPD, which is approximately 2,500 pages. We have about a 12 terabyte drive, a hard drive with regard to the nuclear DNA. We have digital evidence extractions from a number of the digital devices that were recovered from the defendant's residence.
Yeah, so they think they have a slam dunk case here. Huerman's been charged with murdering four women, four female escorts in their 20s. The bodies of the Gilgo Beach four were all found wrapped in burlap at Gilgo Beach. This dates back to 2010. Over to New Jersey at 5:43, a community in Booton expressing their outrage after the town's decision to reverse a ruling that bans almost all flags from being flown outside town hall. Now, a member of the gay community came to Booton, this was about 5 months ago, and asked if they could fly the Pride flag in June, which is Pride Month. The town said okay, but then a new administration came in and they reviewed the policy and they said, no Pride flag, no other flags besides the American flag are going to fly above town hall.
The only reason that we can conclude this is that we're the only ones who submitted an application to run a flag.
That's a member of the gay community very upset that her Pride flag is not going to fly. The Booton mayor, James Lynch, said in a statement that reversing the ruling mitigates the unintended consequences and risk of allowing the town's flagpoles to be public forums that'll be open to all flags, some that could be incredibly offensive to people in the town. And they say that's why they reversed the decision.
The flag has to represent everybody.
Reserving the flagpole of the town for this one thing, I think, is more than appropriate.
So there's a secondary flagpole in Grace Lord Park, which is a public park where they're going to hold this annual Pride Fest in June. So they said, okay, if you're not going to let us fly over town hall, can we fly it on this flagpole? But they said, no, we got the same issue there. If we let your flag fly there, then we'll have to let every flag fly. So members of the gay community upset about that.
I believe in freedom of showing yourself, whoever you are.
I feel like made everyone feel so good that the town was behind them in a way that they hadn't shown before. And I think some people really hated that.
I feel like they're representing their own personal feelings, and they're doing it because they want to.
By the way, we've seen this flag flap in towns all across the tri-state, some of it going back to the October 7th attacks when town halls wanted to fly Israeli flags. There was controversy over that. So Putin says, here's a way to get rid of it all. The only flag that flies above town hall is the American one. 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ellis.
Thank you, Noah Mulladen. Start here on the Diamond up north in Toronto. Aaron Judge broke a 4-all tie with a 2-run single in the ninth inning. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton hit solo home runs. These are all the guys you want contributing if you're Yankees fans. And the Yanks rallied to beat the Toronto Blue Jays 6-4, avoiding their first sweep of the season. Judge was 0-for-12. Against Toronto in the series before coming through on a full count pitch from left-hander Tim Meza with two outs and the bases loaded. He had seven Ks in the series as well leading up to that at bat. Judge's hit meant New York finished 3-3 on a trip to Cleveland and Toronto. Soto had three hits, his third three-hit game of the season, one of probably 100, to be honest with you. He drove in two and reached base five.
It's been a
times.
Pretty good deal bringing Juan Soto over.
Yeah,
right?
Well, and it was Michael Kay made a great point yesterday on the YES Network. He says, very, very rarely in life are things better than advertised. And so far, Juan Soto is better than advertised for Yankees fans. All five times yesterday, reaching base, walking, hitting home runs, hitting doubles, hitting singles. You know, I mean, the guy is just, he's incredible. And the whole team seems to slump off. He's the only guy that doesn't. So as long as he stays hot, he can carry us to wins.
To something.
Yeah, exactly. The Yankees trailed 4-1 through seven innings, but Soto homered off Genesis Cabrera in the eighth, and Stanton connected off Eric Swanson to begin the ninth. A few batters before Judge's big hit, Yankee starter Stroman allowed two runs and six hits in five and a third innings against his former team. He walked two and struck out two. Yanks will enjoy an off day today before opening up a weekend set at home tomorrow against the division rival Tampa Bay Rays. As for the Metropolitans, Starling Marte hit his 150th career homer, powering the Mets to a 9-1 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates and a sweep of that three-game set. Marte, who spent the first eight seasons of his career with the Pirates, hit the milestone two-run homer off the railing beyond the left center field fence to give the Mets a 2-1 lead in the third inning. The 35-year-old is the only active player with at least 150 home runs and 300 stolen bases. His 341 steals leads all current players. Tyrone Taylor hit a two-run single in the sixth, and Harrison Bader homered on the next pitch for the Mets, who went 5-1 on a homestand against the Pirates and Kansas City Royals to improve to 10-3. Since that 0-5 start. Up next for the Orange and Blue after an off day today is the start of a six-game West Coast trip tomorrow with the opener of a three-game set against the Los Angeles Dodgers. On the NBA hardwood, we had two playing games in the East last night. The Bulls eliminated the Hawks with a final of 131-116, while the Sixers beat the Heat 105-104. Philly will now move on to the first round of the playoffs to face our two-seed Knicks. While Miami still lives to see another day, they'll hang back to face Chicago in another elimination game to see who draws one-seed Boston in the first round. That decisive play-in game will take place tomorrow night, along with the final play-in game out west. That'll decide if the Kings or Pelicans will have the pleasure of facing one-seed OKC in the first round. Finally, on the ice in Elmont, Simon Holmstrom scored the go-ahead goal in the third period. Sorokin stopped Sidney Crosby on a late penalty shot. And the playoff-bound New York Islanders edged the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm 2-for-2 on doing that today. The Pittsburgh Penguins, 5-4 in their final regular season game. Brock Nelson had a goal and an assist. Kyle Palmieri also scored for the Isles, who ended their regular season having won eight of their last nine. They're scorching hot heading into the playoffs here. After finishing third in the division, they'll open the playoffs Saturday at 5 p.m. in Carolina against the Hurricanes. Puck drop time has also been announced for game one between our New York Rangers and their first-round opponent in the Washington Capitals. I said Saturday. Report ago at the 5:15 report. I was mistaken, Noam Layden. That's a 3 p.m. puck drop on Sunday afternoon. So if you're Rangers fans, that's Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. puck drop for game one. That's sports. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. The president of Columbia University on the hot seat in Congress yesterday regarding anti-Semitism on her campus. Columbia president Minoshe Shafik says although they were initially unprepared, the university has taken multiple steps following the swarm of pro-Palestinian protests after the October 7th Hamas massacre in Israel.
We held daily meetings of our campus security committee. We brought in extra security expertise and had regular contact with NYPD and the FBI.
No doubt Shafik watched the tapes of the testimony you'll remember from last year where the University of Pennsylvania president, the head of Harvard University and MIT went before this same panel of lawmakers. And boy, they didn't look good. And two of them Harvard's president, University of Pennsylvania's president, they lost their jobs. Shafiq, I think, roundly will be told that she did a much better job, but of course she had a lot more to prepare for, knowing what she was up against. There were a couple moments. Joseph Massad is a professor of modern era politics and history at Columbia University. He was the one who, after the Hamas attack on Israel, called it awesome. And so there's been, of course, a call to kick him off the campus. So they asked the president of Columbia about that yesterday.
Another instance when you changed your testimony is you stated that Professor Massad was no longer chair. Then you stated he's under investigation. He is still chair on the website. So has he been terminated as chair?
Congresswoman, I want to confirm the facts before getting back to you.
I know you confirmed that he was under investigation.
Yes, I can confirm that.
Did you confirm he was still the chair?
I need to confirm that with you. Let me ask you this.
Will you make the commitment to remove him as chair?
I think that would be, I think I would, yes. Let me come back with yes. But I think I just want to confirm his current status before I write.
We'll take that as a yes, that you will confirm that he will no longer be chair.
Yeah, I didn't take that as a yet. But the president of Columbia saying that they didn't do a fantastic job right away protecting Jewish students on campus after the October 7th massacre by Hamas. But she says they're working to do a better job now. New Jersey going to get a portion of the revenue from the MTA's congestion pricing plan. MTA chair CEO Jana Lieber says the money will be split between the affected areas like up in Fort Lee, other places where there may be congestion where people are trying to avoid the toll. So they're going over the George Washington Bridge, that kind of thing.
The way that all of this is determined is allocations by the number of people who are in areas that are impacted by additional truck traffic. And New Jersey will get its share exactly on the arithmetic.
Now, I don't know this for a fact, but I have to guess that Jana Lieber knew that the MTA could potentially be sued by New Jersey for its congestion pricing plan and said, oh, I'll keep this money in my back pocket that I'll then share with New Jersey when things, if they do get bad, hoping that they wouldn't so they could keep all the money. So some of the money will go to New Jersey. If you were listening earlier this morning, Joe Nolan and I have decided that that money that goes to New Jersey should then be handed back to the drivers who have to pay the congestion pricing fare, because that's what initially it was all about, that lawsuit. Some of it was pollution and that kind of thing. But how about giving it back to the drivers? Doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Here's the Bergen County executive, Jim Tedesco.
There's nothing to change the behaviors of the MTA. There's nothing to say that they're going to do a better job of spending $1 billion than they do with hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, so we'll watch and see what happens, but my guess is that money will not make it back to the hands of New Jersey drivers, who are the ones who are going to be affected by this congestion pricing toll, paying the toll to get through the tunnels and the bridge and paying another one to go below 60th Street when the MTA hopes to start this in the middle of June. More barrels filled with toxic chemicals turning up in a Long Island park. When Northrop Grumman left Long Island for Virginia, this was about 36 years ago, it left behind some toxic chemicals buried in 55-gallon drums encased in concrete.
Consists of solvents like TCE, petroleum fluids in it.
Yes, so now they've Oystertown supervisor there, Joseph Saladino, says they were excavating six of those barrels under a ball field at Bethpage Park on Tuesday, and five more barrels were found.
We want Grumman to find where all the drums are buried. These are the sins they left behind. We want them out, and we want all those soils carted off Long Island.
And he's now demanding the aerospace giant dig for toxic barrels across the entire 18-acre park so they can make sure that none of those barrels are left. And we'll leave you with this story. School administrators in New Jersey warning parents about another concerning social media challenge that can put kids in danger. It is called the Blackout Challenge. I wish this wasn't true. It's almost comical if it wasn't so dangerous. So here's the challenge kids do on TikTok, and it's all, of course, about getting views on TikTok. They hold their breath until they pass out. And this has apparently been an issue at South Orange Middle School. Two students, one had to be taken to the hospital after doing this challenge.
Yeah, it's a scary thing that, you know, they're probably doing it in a group. The group might be encouraging them, you know. I'm sure it's a whole peer pressure thing, and they don't know the repercussions.
You know, I'm trying to even figure out how you can do that. How do you hold your breath until you pass out?
We really need our families to really talk with our students, talk with their children just about the these challenges that are out there and how they are not safe, that they are not healthy.
Yeah, so one student went to the hospital. She's okay. The warning going out to parents, parents saying, yeah, they've seen these TikTok videos and shocked that their kids are copying them.
This is something I'm going to look out for, and I'm going to talk to her about it and what are the consequences about what's going to happen if she ever want to do that, and talk to her friends that this is not an appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, kids are dopey, but we were once kids ourselves.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.